Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and today we're going to talk about professionalism and the way to be professional. And what I want to start out by saying is one of our passion projects every day on the Art of Construction is we are a tribe of lifelong learners. And to be a lifelong learner, you always have to be learning. And to do that, the main message and the efforts across the country, in some ways we're seeing it could be weakened or eliminating when it comes to licensing for all professionals and occupations. And so these proposals would downgrade and eliminate critical qualifications without regarding the impact on customer protection and public safety, and without honest consideration of the differences between occupations and highly complex technical professions. And so, Tribe, how this is going to benefit you is that the Alliance for Responsible Professional Licensing, we're going to hear that, you're going to hear that a lot, Alliance for Responsible Professional Licensing. But you're going to hear that as ARPL, A-R-P-L. So ARPL promotes a responsible, balanced approach to professional licensing. And what they're out to aim and to educate policymakers and the public on the importance of protecting rigorous licensing for professionals with high public impact. And they also provide best practices and practical solutions to help states solve occupation-specific licensing challenges. And so my perspective, Tribe, is that a non-licensed AEC professional, I hear that and I say, that could be a disaster, right? And so why are some state groups working towards this as a reality? And how can contractors help with ARPL's mission? And what should we be aware of? And as lifelong learners and always trying to build better buildings, don't expect what you don't inspect. And you have to have leaders that can help you do that to move your business forward in a bigger business, what this podcast and the Art of Construction Tribe is all about. So today we have Master Facilitator in the Art of Construction, Mike Armstrong, who's the CEO of ARPL and NCARB. So without further ado, let's get in to know his story, have as much fun as possible, and talk about how we can use their platform to build better buildings. Lock and load, Tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
I'm assuming you mean adult beverage. And if that's the case, I would say a Negroni.
Ah, it's funny. I've heard that a few times over the years. And my sales director with my company also, that's his passion drink as well. But
well, it's easy to make. And it is bitter enough that you can't just chug it.
I probably need to look at that more when you're getting after it. What's a favorite place you've traveled?
Paris, France.
Ooh, give us one story from that.
I think it's the overall aesthetic of being somewhere where everything matters in terms of visual, whether it's architecture, placement of food on a plate, the way a woman wears a scarf, the lens through which you look at life. It just seems to be something that is very calming and inspirational at the same time.
Love it. And what is your passion and or hobby outside of the NCARB or ARPL that you're leading that we passionately call the Art of Construction?
Well, I travel quite a bit for my job, so I enjoy cities. I like walking and not just looking at the architecture, but other things related to the cultural arts, museums, the performing arts, that sort of thing.
Well, awesome. So I want to start off before we hear your story, Mike, is I want to have you talk through the two different organizations that we're going to talk about today. So what is the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, or NCARB?
Well, it's a mouthful in terms of the title, for starters. But every state and U.S. territory has a licensing board. And they have the legal authority to create the criteria for licensure and to discipline licensed professionals. We act as a federation of all the state licensing boards. So we bring all the jurisdictions together to talk about uniform laws, common practices, We write the national exam that all architects pursuing licensure must take. We provide guidelines regarding experience requirements and education requirements. And through a consensus process, we develop model laws and model regulations and national policy that state and jurisdictional governments either adopt or adapt. So we act as kind of the information engine, if you will. And then we also assure mobility across state lines through our certificate program. So in some professions like architecture, there is a way to credential you so that you have a passport where you can practice in any jurisdiction. And that's called the NCARB certificate. So we receive everyone's record, including their transcript if they went to school and their exam results and their experience compliance. And then we put that together into a certificate. And then if, for example, you're practicing in Colorado and you want to practice adjacent in Wyoming or Utah or somewhere else, the NCARB certificate is your passport and your expediter, if you will, to getting a reciprocal license in another state or territory. And architects enjoy national mobility because of the NCARB certificate. Unfortunately, there are some professions that don't have such a vehicle and they have to retest or go through another certification all over again if they want to practice somewhere else. But so we really facilitate licensure and reciprocal licensure around the U.S.
Awesome. So NCARB is the architecture part of the Alliance for Responsible Professional Licensing, or ARPL, is this platform that works in these different segments. Is that right?
Well, we are a member of ARPL. We helped found ARPL along with, it's an interesting alliance because it brings together both professional societies and regulatory bodies. So the each side of that equation is represented by architects, accountants, engineers, and landscape architects, as well as surveyors. And that alliance then is conscious of what is in law and then what the profession might want to advocate for. So we're sort of a clearinghouse for all of those organizations, and we are a member of ARPL.
Got it. Well, we're going to talk more and peel back that onion on how all this works. But first, what led you to being involved with these two organizations?
Well, I always start out by telling people I'm a recovering lawyer. I started out in journalism at the University of Colorado Boulder and worked for a lot of newspapers. And then I went off to law school, got out of law school, came back to Colorado. And for 10 years, I worked as an assistant city attorney working in the land use arena. So I worked on zoning, planning, code enforcement, historic preservation, and pre-litigation regarding interpretation of laws for the city council. Do some political work in Colorado, and then after that was appointed by the governor at the time to be the deputy for energy conservation, then went on to two political appointments at FEMA and the Clinton administration working on risk reduction and hazard mitigation, then worked for a consulting firm supporting state and local governments on homeland security and emergency management strategic planning, and then to the International Code Council, where I had a large portfolio for training, education, testing, certification, and the like, and came to NCARB really because of my Colorado connection. I had a friend who was an architect in Colorado who I had done political work with, and he had followed my career and knew that most of my career had really been focused on protecting the public from an enforcement or legal perspective, and told me that a CEO position was opening up at this organization called NCARB. And he'd given my name to a headhunter because he had been on the NCARB board of directors. And so they interviewed me. And at that point in my career, I really was focused on being a very good, effective association executive. And I was really more interested in the fundamentals of helping organizations be efficient and progressive and productive. And lo and behold, as I went through the interview process, I realized that the mission of NCARB was almost going back to my roots as a city attorney, working on building codes there and with the ICC. And really, it kind of flattered everything I'd done in my career, including outreach and political work and engaging with other organizations. So it ended up being a really good fit at a time where the organization wanted to change in leadership. So that's what got me to NCARB. And then regarding ARPL, it was an issue that I spotted along with some of my colleagues in other related organizations, that there was a growing need to have a strong voice arguing for the value of licensure, explaining to members of state legislatures that regulation can be reasonable, and if it's reasonable, it needs to be effective.
Great stuff. So I just want to start off, Mike, let's hit this head on. Why is professional licensing so important, particularly for construction that we call the Art of Construction Tribe?
Well, I think everybody that's associated with construction is charged with protecting the public. And when you get into the issue of protecting the public, meaning that if you don't do it the right way, someone could get hurt, a community could be negatively impacted. We refer to it as health, safety, and welfare of the public. I think it's important that people have credentials, that they are qualified to protect the public. And so whether you're a contractor or you're an architect or you're an engineer, having a license, having a credential, I think it's really essential that the public knows that the people that are charged with protecting them are qualified to do so.
Love it. So don't expect what you don't inspect, and kind of manage both sides of that is kind of your background and putting that stuff together. And so can you kind of elaborate, how do licensing boards like NCARB protect design professionals and the general public? Can you give some examples of that?
Sure. So these licensing boards that compose NCARB, again, all 50 states plus the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, Guam, and the Northern Marianas, all have a licensing board. By law, by their state constitution, they are charged with the function of granting a license. The path to licensure is the three E's: education, experience, and examination. And through those three E's, there is a result that confers a license because someone is qualified through a combination of what you learn in school, what you experience working at a firm, and then what you confirm that you know when you take the examination. So the states adopt or adapt the tools that we provide. And then not only do they then confer the actual license, but they act as the recipient of complaints regarding ethical or other violations by a practitioner that might cause a disciplinary action, up to and including removal of a license.
I've never heard that. The three E's is one of my golden nuggets you've already dropped.
Yeah.
Education, experience, and examination, as we talk about as lifelong learners, like that's really what it boils down to. And you can't just have theory without practice. You have to have this theory and practice and put all that together. Am I understanding kind of that vein that the principal foundation is built on?
Well, and I would add too that we're starting to see a movement toward recognizing that education occurs in different ways. So while the majority of architects graduate from an accredited bachelor or master's program, there are some states that allow you to get extra experience in lieu of a formal education, including California and New York, which are generate the two largest numbers of architects on an annual basis. So I think as we're talking about the burden of student debt, access to education, depending on where you live, and how one learns, everyone's a little bit different, right? I was a horrible student, but when it came to performative things, I did very well, experiential things. So I think as we talk about the construction industry, we're all aware that the industry itself could probably be more diverse in terms of both gender and race. And we need to look at what are the impediments toward that diversity, and maybe some of the formalities of how you get there need to be revisited. So while we talk about the three E's, they represent more and more of a variety of paths, or multiple paths, as we like to call them, toward licensure.
Yeah, well said. And we got to think through, like, I talk about how we are all about radical candor and radical change, right? And figuring that out. But what's going on when it comes to licensing reform in state houses across the country? And is there really a call to eliminate some of these professional licensing? And why should the construction industry be paying such close attention to this?
Well, I was having a conversation like this a couple of weeks ago at the annual conference of the International Code Council. And I was talking to a code official about the fact that they count on the fact that an architect or an engineer that they work with is licensed. They, by themselves, the code officials can't fully do their jobs unless they know they're working alongside qualified professionals. And the same is true with the contractor industry. If you can't count on that alliance or that partner in another discipline, you're not delivering to the public what they're expecting in terms of, again, the protection of their public health, safety, and welfare. So what's going on in state legislatures across the country is that there is a heavily funded movement through various libertarian organizations to remove licensure or dilute licensure, even to the point of eliminating state licensing boards in the name of less government. The idea that these qualification criteria somehow impede one's ability to work, to make money, to do what they want to do without the government getting in the way. And I think the roots of this, some of them are well-intentioned, and it gets back to a number of years ago. And this is, by the way, an issue that we're hearing from both sides of the political equation. There was an interest, for example, in the Obama administration about returning veterans and their families. And if they left the country being licensed in one particular jurisdiction and then they settle in another part of the country and they have to start all over again, that didn't seem to honor their service and recognize their skill set. And then, and that was during the Obama administration. Then in the Trump administration, the Federal Trade Commission was pretty rigorous in pursuing what they felt was an abuse of authority and abuse of responsibility by state licensing boards. And then legislators have picked up on in some states that there are certain types of licensing that maybe are unnecessary. For example, Louisiana still licenses florists. Well, why is that? Or the licensing of people in other industries where maybe the public health, safety, and welfare isn't so important in terms of what the day-to-day job is. And also, if you don't have some uniformity in laws across the country, then there is an impediment on getting a license in another jurisdiction because you have to start all over again. So I think the industry has some responsibility here to promote more uniformity so that it's easier to pursue mobility. It's the lack of mobility that is causing some people to say, do we really need a license? Or they're trying to come at it from a different direction, saying, well, if you're licensed in one place, can't you just be licensed everywhere? Which sort of flies in the face of a belief in states' rights and federalism.
Yeah, and that's a deep topic that we could talk all day of different, you know, unintended consequences when you go one way or the other. And it's the, you know, the political shift and understanding is we have a lot of conversations around blending on-site and off-site construction. And one of the big challenges about that is like you're trying to standardize this kit of parts that can be volumetric or volume can get pushed and these designs can be replicated, which has to take off, right? Sure. But then that riches in the niches or all markets are local is different places require different things. And then you better Absolutely. Have somebody who understands where we live in the beautiful state of Colorado. And it's a great example of a state that we have all four seasons. And that's kind of our secret that we don't want to let too many people know. But having those seasons requires different conditions, right? So sure, I want to ask you, what would the unintended consequences for the construction industry if architects' licenses were, you know, weakened or eliminated, heaven forbid?
Well, for starters, you could have people that were unqualified to practice who would be representing to the public, sure, I'll take this project and I can build you whatever. And then the code official doesn't know whether that in the international building codes, the chapter one only allows a certificate of occupancy if the CO is signed off on by a licensed professional. So what does that mean? State and local governments have largely adopted that chapter in their building code. So do they look the other way and not enforce the codes? How much danger? Who knows? We're lucky in this country compared to other countries. You read about an earthquake of a certain seismic level in other countries and the whole city collapses. When it happens in the US, that doesn't happen. There's a reason for that. It's because we have licensed professionals, because we have building codes in place, because we have rules that are designed to protect the public.
Well said, and I can definitely feel your passion with that. It's not do it just to make it harder on someone, but you have to have the rules or the rules of the game of the great game of business, right? And down to the foundation of this thing is this getting down to having employees versus subcontractors at every level of figuring out who is properly insured and building something that is insured. And
right.
Who is actually calling the shots of does this actually meet the stipulations or not? And construction gets really messy if you don't have kind of a guiding light like you guys have built to kind of help be able to take the kit of parts and transfer that design, that enthusiasm, right. That replication is what I'm really passionate about making sure we're thinking about here.
Well, and that's very true because one of the studies that ARPL did with Oxford Economics talked about the economic benefits of licensure and the concerns of the business community, such as insurance companies and banks and others that help underwrite construction projects. They want to know that their risk is being mitigated. They want assurance that their investment is being protected. They don't want to invest in construction where there aren't licensed professionals involved.
So I kind of want to talk about one of the challenges of like, we're always talking about doing the right thing. And to do the right thing, you have to have all the right licenses, insurance, and all those different things to be able to be protected and protect yourself and the people that you're doing construction with. Can you talk about the downstream effects of downgrading professional licensing for construction business owners and how would it impact their ability to win projects, secure loans, and afford liability insurance? Because it's this chicken or the egg syndrome we're under of everything's too expensive, but it's too expensive because I got to pay all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I, building on my previous comments about the study we did with Oxford Economics, I think it would be harder to get financing for projects because the financial industry is very risk averse. Whether it's a bank or an insurance company, they don't want to take the risk of investing if they think there's a chance they're going to lose their shirt, and so they're And other groups like the Chamber of Commerce, they're very interested in making sure that licensure is present and that it is sustained. I think we all recognize that licensure has to evolve. Some streamlining can always be useful and no process is perfect. But organizations like mine are at the table every day trying to demonstrate how we are evolving and streamlining and staying current and relevant to today's societal needs.
I love that. We have to be able to change, but you can't just change. It has to all kind of row and streamline in a way that makes it work for everybody. Let's niche in a little bit. Can you go ahead, Mike?
I was just going to say that I think we're dealing, let's remember at the end of the day that we're on this issue of licensure and the dilution or elimination of licensure. We're dealing with elected officials who want to get publicity back to their electorate that they're doing something that's changing something, that they're doing something for the voters. And so it's always convenient to run against government, to run against quote unquote over-regulation. And so what we're finding is that many politicians are wanting to throw the baby out with the bathwater. They're not distinguishing between licensure for the professions that protect the health, safety, and welfare and other types of licensure or credentialing that might have existed more in a different era because there was an interest in protecting a profession based on a strong lobbying effort that might have occurred. And so talking to elected officials about, surely you didn't mean engineers and architects, did you? Oh no, we didn't mean them. Well, then don't write a bill that's so broad brushstroke that it negates everything that protects the public. So it's really about just sitting these elected officials down and saying, look, I think I know where you're headed here. I understand what you're frustrated with. And I know that you want to get some press for your next reelection campaign, but there's a way to do this where you don't mess things up.
100%. And I've been sitting in some different roundtables around how to, and it's like Denver, for example, of like how the zoning and the laws, they get into one way and then you get stuck, right? So you got to make sure that you're understanding potential unintended consequences. So I want to niche in a little bit. And can you fill us in on the specific state of Colorado's licensing process and anything that the public should know about that as an example?
Sure. Well, Colorado has a licensing board for architects. The licensing board members are appointed by the governor. Colorado actually has a really great model on how the board members are appointed. Their model is often shown as a best practice model to the rest of the country, where they look for a geographic balance and other balances so that it is truly a nonpartisan and representative board of the entire state. So that's one thing people should know, is that there is a process by which people get appointed, and it's run by the governor's office. The licensing process in Colorado is not terribly dissimilar from a lot of other states, except Colorado is one of the states where you don't have to graduate from an accredited program. You could pursue a license through extra experience. There's actually only one accredited architecture school in the state, and that's the school at the University of Colorado at Denver. The Boulder program used to be the accredited one, but they moved it over to Denver. But basically, it's the three E's: education, experience, and examination. Colorado does not have any supplemental examination that is jurisdiction specific. There are some jurisdictions, to your earlier point of uniqueness in states. For example, Florida has a supplemental exam to double down on understanding the impact of wind. And of course, relevant to what's going on this week with the hurricanes. Alaska has a supplemental exam that has to deal with colder weather and snow load. California has a supplemental that deals with seismic issues. So there are some states that layer on a supplemental exam beyond the standard exam that we design, called the Architectural Registration Exam, or the ARE. Although I would offer that the International Building Codes also address hazards in all their forms, and we sample from the International Codes on our exam itself. So we think we do a pretty good job of covering the waterfront. But that's sort of a thumbnail of Colorado's process. We have a program called the Architectural Experience Program, AXP, and one has to report hours, half of which have to be working for a licensed architect, and the remaining hours can be working for an adjacent profession like engineering. And there are different categories. I won't call them out on this podcast, but they're all available on our website at www.ncarb.org. And then our examination, it has six divisions. It's a computer-based examination. It can be taken at a test center, or we offer it online.
And I'm assuming on your website, if you're not in the state of Colorado, it kind of breaks it down of the different states of where you can go and understanding what you need to do, whether you're just getting into it or somebody, because I think a lot of it is challenging, right? Someone who may not be licensed or may, you know, not really understanding the rules of the game, don't expect, we don't inspect. So go check it out, understand wherever you fit into the art of construction of how you can actually, when you're paying for design and execution, how it's actually being documented in the rules of the game.
Yeah, we actually have a cool feature on our website where you can just go to the map and click, and it'll list out for you the licensure qualifications for every jurisdiction.
I'm glad you said that, because I noticed that, and I thought that was a really cool tool on your website. So yeah. From ARPL's perspective, how can licensing be improved? And are there lessons to be learned from ARPL professionals' licensing models with respect to issues like mobility?
Well, I believe ARPL's perspective, first of all, is that our main agenda is to explain how licensing works and why it's necessary. That the steps to a license are not impeding mobility. In the case of the architects, engineers, and the like, the fact that we have a certificate that confers this passport status means that these professions are already quite mobile. So there's nothing you have to fix at the state legislative level to make those professions more mobile. How can licensing be improved? Well, again, to the degree that there are administrative impediments or accessibility impediments to getting a license, not just literally accessibility, but figuratively as well, I think everyone can improve in those areas.
Awesome. Well, you mentioned the website, and we'll make sure we put links in the show notes so people can go check that out. But any other tools, or where would you guide people where people can learn more about ARPL and get involved in the fight to protect against professional licensure?
Well, for any of your listeners that might be engineers, for example, the American Society of Civil Engineers and then the National Society of Professional Engineers, NSPE and ASCE, are both ARPL members. And so through their professional societies, they can learn about advocacy and how to be prepared to talk to members of state legislatures. The same is true with landscape architects, with the American Society of Landscape Architects, ASLA. And regarding the accountants, members of the AICPA. So these professional societies all convene at the grassroots level and can be helpful in preparing one to talk to a member of your legislature. But I think the best way is to go to the ARPL website, but to also speak up. If you know a member of the state of your state legislature and you have an opportunity to tell them that I want to make sure that you're protecting reasonable regulation and licensure is essential for all of these professions that protect the public.
Well, Mike, you've given us so many great things to think about and understanding how we can actually learn together and work and grow together to build better buildings. The question we always ask as we get ready to close this thing out, what is your crystal ball for the future when it comes to mitigating what you're doing with ARPL and blending that with technology in construction?
Sure. Well, I'm not a contractor, but I know that technology is impacting those that enforce the codes. For example, the ability to read building plans and scan building plans online and to use software tools to detect violations of code or potential non-compliance with code so that the plans can be adjusted is a reality today. And there are a lot more software programs coming online that will help with that. I think also in the arena of licensure and credentialing and qualification, I think artificial intelligence is going to play an increasing role in acknowledging that we all, as I said earlier, we all learn differently. Some of us are good book learners. Some of us are better experiential learners. And for example, how we take a test. Some of us are bad at test taking. So how do we best measure competency? I anticipate that technology, particularly artificial intelligence, but other methodologies as well, is going to revolutionize how we determine someone is competent to practice. And the other issue that we're involved in right now, one of the other issues, is the idea of overlapping practice. There are times when an architect is doing something that maybe an engineer would normally do, or vice versa, or interior designers, for example, or landscape architects in the design professions how can technology help us discern when overlapping practice is appropriate and when it really crosses the line and it's outside one's scope? So we're trying to learn how we can call that out in law, but how does it get enforced? There are certainly technological advances in the arena of surveying, for example, and other related professions. So, and certainly the software programs today that architecture firms use are just mind-blowing in terms of new design techniques, new use of materials. Every few years, you're seeing something new. You pointed things like how Frank Gehry pioneered the use of titanium and looking at his buildings like the Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles or Bilbao in Spain. The relationship between materials and contractors and designers is just getting more and more exciting in terms of how these buildings can protect us in new ways, become even more functional for the occupants of the building, and make an impression on the aesthetics of our communities, where we live, work, and play. So I think there's a lot on the horizon in terms of we won't even recognize 10 or 20 years from now.
Awesome, Mike. And the last question for you that we always ask as we started this and keep on going, what is that one thing you want to leave the tribe to think about for contractors and affiliates to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
Try to align yourself with people who are licensed professionals. Make sure they're licensed. Don't take their word for it. Ask to see their license. And also help us police the ethics of licensed professionals. If you see something, say something. These state licensing boards exist to make sure that people are respecting the code of ethics in their professions and that they are acting as responsible partners working with you.
Absolutely love it. So many great things to think about. And Mike, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story and all that you do for the industry to align the people and the practice to all come together and build better buildings.
My pleasure.
Tribe, there's so much things I'm thinking about from that conversation that I raise my hand and say, I've always been one that likes to run against the grain, right? And when Mike talked, I love how he talked about how no process is perfect, but we have to all work together. And I loved how he said, you know, streamline and stay current, but you know, it's kind of convenient. And I say, I'm a micro influencer and a disruptor. It's kind of convenient to be able to run against regulation, right? But if we're creating an alliance, we're creating the Art of Construction tribe to all be on the same page, that's really hard, right? And if we talk about being master facilitators or champions, that's what we have to do if we're going to break this thing down and move it forward. And I love at the close out when he talked about how technology forces these change in a way that where it the codes to be more efficient. And that's what we need, right? You don't want to have municipalities and people that can't get a license, even though they really should have a license or not doing the right thing. You can go on and on and on, but we have to automate standards and we have to be able to diversify learning methods. That was one of my big takeaways where they're recognizing, because I raise my hand and say, I got a lot of C's in school. Like it was like just getting by if I wasn't into it, because I totally relate when he talks to about an experiential learner. I think about in college where when I really got to the end and I was getting out and I was putting my passions to work, those were A's, no problem. But when it was certain theory, I struggled with that. We all struggle with certain things. So that's, we got to help each other out. And that's where it really boils down to subscribe, reach out to us. Thank you for so many people that have been reaching out to the message board. You know, my team, I apologize that we can't get to everybody because there's just so many great stories to be told out there. And I leave you with this. You got to use the rules that are out there and you got to understand if I'm going to go and refresh myself, I'm going to go to that map and I'm going to click on Colorado because I'm intricately involved in Colorado. I'm going to make sure I don't expect, we don't inspect and understand that because You don't want to get yourself into trouble. And that's what these platforms are there to do, is to force us to be champions. And dang it, tribe, go be a champion. Getting a license is just, that's step one when it comes to being master facilitators and being responsible and doing the right thing. So make sure you understand, if you're going to be an architect, then go understand what it means to be a leader architect and lead the rules of the game. So much great stuff. His team brought so much content that we'll put into the show notes to get involved, help move, keep moving the needle forward, and collaborating to have as much fun as possible. Crush it out there, tribe.